Hello and welcome to Unbreak My Chart, the podcast that tapes the top 10 and talks about it at school the next day. On this week's agenda, Record Store Day, the aftermath, modern drugs, and just a massive pile of new releases. I'm Fraser McAlpine.
I'm Laura Snapes. How's it going, Fraser?
It's good. I'm excited about this week because we've got lots and lots of music to talk about.
And lots of new music to talk about as well, finally.
Yeah, very true. And we were going to start by piling into... We looked last week at the sort of vinyl singles top 10, just as a kind of hat tip towards Record Store Day. But this week we actually looked at the same chart again, just to see how Record Store Day had changed that chart. And as you might expect, the entire top 10, with one notable exception, is entirely different. So at number 10, there is Thinking of a Place by The War on Drugs, which is an extremely good value for money Record Store Day release, isn't it, Laura?
Yes, 11 whole minutes long. So since The War on Drugs released their last album in 2014, they've now signed to Atlantic, and this hasn't officially been announced as the first single from their new album, but I think it's obviously leading towards that kind of thing. It's very classic War on Drugs. I mean, I listened to about 5 minutes of it and thought, I've kind of got all I need out of this, and then kind of skipped forward a bit to see what else was going on later on in it, and it was like, oh, there's a harmonica solo to come, there's a drifty quiet part to come. I had no strong feelings about it. I don't think I would consciously sit and listen to the entire 11 minutes. There was pain in your eyes, so you vanished in the night. Missouri River in the distance, so a light upon the lawn. I remember walking against the darkness of the beach, love is like a ghost in the distance of a reach. People who find themselves adrift in the world of modern music and pine for the olden days like The War on Drugs. They just like, you know, they like the classic rock element to them. And I think releasing an 11-minute long single that meanders in the way that this does, with the adenoidal Bob Dylan vocals and, you know, all of that comes with it, is like a safe place to hide in a scary modern world, even within music. So I sort of get that it is what it is. I agree, for me, I kind of need melodically something different to happen to justify 11 minutes, or for the repetition to be so exciting that you're like, how can they keep this up? How can they keep going with this thing? It's the same thing. Oh, my word. But it doesn't feel like that either. Not that he's trying to be, but it's not exactly like Giorgio Moroder or something that you could listen to for half an hour and still feel fine about it. No. But maybe it's him trying to, now that he is on a major label, maybe it's Adam Granduciel trying to reassure people like, I might be on a big label, but I'm still the same man. Here's 11 minutes to prove it.
What I like about this and the number 9 position songs is they both feel like Record Store Day done in the way that I think it should be done, if it's done at all. You know, so it feels like so people are going to go away from this with a new song they didn't already own and feel excited by listening to it. It's not the object that they're buying into. It's the music that's on it. And I think so long as you've got that, I don't really care about Record Store Day. I think Record Store Day is perfectly fine. If you're making, expensive items to add to your, collector's collection, I don't care at all. So this is one example of that, which is the new song that could be on the new album, but it's still an exciting thing in and of itself. But the number 9 position is another factor of Record Store Day that also feels kind of great, which is We Can't Stop What's Coming by The, which is not only a comeback, but it's a comeback with a specific emotional intent.
Yeah, it's so it's a tribute to Matt Johnson's late brother Andrew, who was also known as Andy Dog, who passed away late last year. He also designed a lot of the band's record sleeves. And it's, I don't know if Johnny Marr has kind of perpetually been in The, but obviously it was after he left the Smiths, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so he's back on this, and people like Zeke Manyika and James Eller are back as well. And I have to say, I haven't actually heard it because it's not online, because it's a Record Store Day release, true to the spirit of the day.
Yeah.
I think it was played on Lamac's show, but the show has now expired.
Yeah, there's a clip on the BBC's sort of archive of 30-second musical clips. They have like a huge database of that, so you can hear some of that. And we're not going to put it into the podcast to honour the spirit of the release. It's a limited edition of 2,000 copies. Everybody that's got a copy will be thrilled with it. It's definitely feels like something that is for fans. And in order to hear the song, you've got to listen to the, you've got to put the needle on the record. And I think that's a, you know, an illustration of when Record Store Day can be really thrilling. And it feels like old indie meeting the sort of Record Store Day world of new indie of nowadays. But it's not a cynical release because it's done with the best of intentions.
Unlike number 8, Without You I'm Nothing by Placebo featuring David Bowie, a song that really nobody wanted to even hear at the time. It came out in 1999 and it didn't chart anywhere apart from in France, where it went to number 79, and Australia, where it went to number 52.
Yeah, it was in that period where David Bowie was not a cultural touchstone in the way that he now is, and sort of became, he luckily became it again while he was still alive, but it wouldn't, there was no guarantee of superb success if you had David Bowie attached to your single. And and Placebo, although there was a clear match between Placebo and David Bowie, it feels like a cynical re-release for Record Store Day. It's the sort of thing that makes you go, oh, fine. Whereas some of them are kind of mystifying. I don't know why. And number 7 is a 7-inch, or presumably, of Into the Groove by Madonna. These things weren't rare. They're not difficult to get hold of. So it's very, very strange. So I mean, we're moving on a little bit with number 6, which is You're in Love with a Psycho by Kasabian. You have to say it like that. It's the law. It's quite impressive that they're in there among all of these confections and collector's gigors, because it's actually a proper release of a song that's actually out as a single now. I mean, hats off to Kasabian for being in the top 10 under those circumstances.
Not quite beating at number 5, hip young gunslingers, The Beatles with Strawberry Fields Forever.
Oh, they'll never get anywhere with a name like that.
I know. Number 4 is Red Hill Mining Town 2017 mix by U2, which not that I care about U2, but maybe some of these things are interesting in that this shows almost a parallel path of history. What could have been, Red Hill Mining Town was going to be the second single from Joshua Tree, but they went with a small song called I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For instead. You wonder how different things would have been if they had released Red Hill Mining Town instead.
The interesting thing, the thing with Red Hill Mining Town, I always liked it as a hidden gem at the end of the Joshua Tree. And there's something of value in album tracks that could have been singles that make you love them all the more because they don't get all of the lavish attention. So in a sense, it's a little bit annoying that they've released it as a single for Record Store Day, whether there's a remix or not.
I don't know. Tell that to Neil McCormick. I'm sure he can hear great differences in this mix to the original.
Sepulchral majesty.
At number 3 is Pink Floyd with Interstellar Overdrive.
It's nice, that. It's a big, long, jammy thing about space.
Number 2, The Smiths with The Boy with the Thorn in His Side.
Now, this is hilarious. I just love the fact that Smiths are doing these Record Store Day releases because they wrote a song about this. It's called Paint a Vulgar Picture, and it's about record companies getting excited about their own back catalogue because of a context that makes it worth selling stuff. So it's the David Bowie scenario where you've got on your hands at last a dead star. And so the Smiths, whatever they do, and they make the people that own the Smiths back catalogue now are releasing these records, and they're giving them Smiths type covers to fit in with the rest of the Smiths single sleeves and all of that stuff. But it's, they've already written about how cheesy and crass this is, and yet they're taking part in it. And I just find the whole thing weird. I think people, Smiths fans should be like, will probably be torn, I would hope. Any proper Smiths fans would be kind of torn about what to do, because Morrissey has already said not to do this. It's literally like releasing a bacon sandwich stamped with the Smiths logo and saying, there, now what are you going to do about that?
I just think I think it's a shame, or maybe somebody at the record label was kind of secretly aware of the whole paint a vulgar picture thing. It's not a picture disc, and that would have been a great headline. Paint a vulgar picture disc. Morrissey lashes out at Boy with a Thorn in His Side reissue. But it is just a normal 7-inch with a new cover in a limited worldwide release of 12,000. Highly limited.
Yeah, I know. That. I mean, who knows who could get their hands on that? The feverish rush to be one of the many, 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 many thousands of people that owns the thing that the lead singer of your band has said is crap. before you even get there.
And number one is No Plan by David Bowie. And I'm pretty sure this isn't a Record Store Day release because this was in the chart when we had a look at it last week.
No, I think it's genuinely people going into record. I mean, and in a way, this is the point of Record Store Day, isn't it? It gets people into the record shop to buy things that they want, not necessarily things that are the best bargains, you know, the Toto picture disc of Africa with Rosanna on the B-side, but to buy genuinely music that they want to hear. And No Plan was released specifically as a, you know, as a different release from Bowie's other stuff. It's a, you know, a standalone release by him, and it's great, and it was in the singles chart last week because it's great. So the hordes of people that went into record shops over the last weekend to buy or to look at what these great, exciting new things were being made came out with the thing that already existed that was of the most musical value, and that's heartening.
Yes, totally. So the next thing that we were going to talk about was a couple of days ago, I sent Fraser an article that I thought might annoy him a little bit. It was in the Washington Post, and it's by a guy called Chris Richards, and the title was Soft, Smooth and Steady, How Xanax Turned American Music into Pill Pop. And it's a long report on whether pop music has to be soothing in an age of upsetting politics and whether that is a reflection of people's changing recreational drug use as well. A few years ago, I suppose people were talking about Americans waking up to quote-unquote Molly, what I think we know as MDMA or ecstasy, and pop getting very kind of high-octane because of that. But now Chris Richards is theorising tempos are dropping, textures are becoming softer, everybody's getting very mellow on soothing mind drugs, and maybe this reflects like a whole generational thing. What did you think? What was your response to this article, Fraser?
I hate articles that use the universal we as if everybody does exactly the same thing at all times, because it's a useful rhetorical device for writers, but it absolutely doesn't play into the enormous breadth of different experiences that people have when they're doing things, anything. So as a general rule, we should, or we are, we do, we are, you know, it's just like, well, we just don't. So straight away your argument is wrong.
There's a line in it that says, when everyone seems to be on drugs, everyone's music sounds more and more like pill pop.
So who is it that's on drugs? 13-year-old kids that are listening to Justin Bieber? Don't buy it. I don't think that's true. I do buy the idea that people are listening to softer, emotional, reassuring music in a time of global unrest. I do buy the idea that parents are scared, and so even younger kids, teenagers are switched on anyway. They're aware that Donald Trump is Donald Trump, and that he's scary because of that. So they'll be having those emotional reactions. But the thing that article leaves out is that music is a drug. People use music in the way that they use recreational drugs. So it does things to that. They go to it because they need to feel something, and that you don't actually have to be taking the recreational drugs to have those needs and those feelings met by music. So I don't know that I buy necessarily the really neat, tied together idea that we're all doing the same thing and we're all doing it for the same reasons and we all want the same thing and we all. Some people in the face of changing times go back to the music of their youth and run away from modern pop music and from what's going on in the modern world and harken back to classic rock or stuff that they grew up with. So I don't know. I mean, it's a really interesting article to read. I'd urge you to read it because it will provoke your own thoughts on what is going on. I think anybody with any ear for music and what music can do will possibly feel a little bit like that he has downplayed the effects of actual music and made it seem to be like just a thing that you do while you're taking your recreational drugs.
Yeah, I totally agree. There's a line, I think the thing that's kind of obviously kickstarted this thought in his mind is Lana Del Rey's new single Love, which he writes, "It sounds like 2 milligrams of Xanax crushed into dust and set adrift on the Pacific breeze in your mind," which it may well do. But I think to read that as like a drug thing seems very lazy and very obvious. Something else I way preferred reading about it was the writer Hazel Sills, writing for MTV News, wrote this brilliant piece about how Lana Del Rey has used boredom in her music. And she wrote, "While many other artists have since moved on to more mainstream, quote-unquote, engaged pastures, Lana's boredom has been relentless. Her catalogue of ennui can be exhausting, but her boredom seems purposeful, an exploration into the unbelievably dull corners of America, of sex, of beauty." which I know, I find that so much more of a compelling way to look at something, to investigate the way that, you know, people might say that Lana Del Rey's music is boring and it's one note, but to actually get inside of her music and investigate why that might be, instead of just thinking, oh, well, it must be a drug thing. And there's another bit in his article where he writes about, well, I think he's kind of trying to liken the experience of listening to music on downloads to the experience of listening to music through streaming platforms. And he writes, streaming is designed to feel cool and undisruptive. It promises fluid, frictionless listening, an experience that can be entirely predictable, even when you don't know exactly what's coming next. Most of the major platforms' recommendation algorithms are designed to suggest music that's similar to what you're already listening to. Instead of going on a trip, streaming allows you to stay put. The sound washes over you, smooth and steady. I think the drug that he's looking for here, rather than like Xanax or some other kind of downer, is capitalism. I think, not to be all, you know, ad busters about it, but I think that is the drug of streaming, not Xanax.
But also, I mean, actually, it betrays a huge amount of lack of creative input into his own listening. What it says about him is more revealing than it says about the global we, because I don't listen to streaming stuff like that. I don't rely on the algorithms. I do go off and find new releases and stuff on Spotify using streaming stuff, and I will make playlists. But I'm looking for things that don't wash over me like that. I will. But in a way, when you curate your own musical world, which we all do, mixtapes have always been that thing. You know, so you're not going to necessarily put in some extreme death metal in the middle of your, your ambient house playlist or whatever. But that's the way minds work. That's not necessarily the way that drugs work. I just think that it's a specious analogy to make, to claim that it's all down to, you know, the way that minds are changing. People are doing what they've always done, which is listen to music and then think, well, where do I want to go next? And sometimes it's brilliant to put really extreme, different musical, jarring musical ideas next to each other. Sometimes you don't want that, in the same way that, you know, in the middle of Jurassic Park, you don't suddenly want half an hour that seems to be cut from Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
So with that idea thoroughly debunked, let's move on into the actual pop top 10 that is being listened to by people not on drugs, and people on drugs as well. At number 10, we've got Humble Full Stop by Kendrick Lamar, and Laura has a confession to make.
I mean, I really respect Kendrick Lamar a lot. I think his contribution to hip-hop is really massive, and he's a brilliant lyricist, and I'm really glad that he exists, especially with everything that's going on in America right now. But I just can't get on with his voice, and like, especially in this song, this phrasing in it is so short and so bouncy. It's like somebody bouncing one of those Powerball things from a very low height. And you've got, you know, that tiny kind of range that it's moving in on top of a really rudimentary beat by Mike Will Made It, which, I mean, that sounded a bit grime influenced to me, but it doesn't have any of the kind of like fun, or I'm hesitant to say it doesn't have any of the flair of grime, because of course there's loads of, like, Kendrick Lamar has loads of flair, but I just find this really hard to listen to. For a song about flexing his prowess, I found it really, really one note. But I am very keen to stress that this is a like wildly uneducated judgment, and I'm totally happy to accept that I just do not get this song, while also really, really appreciating the fact that it is in the top 10 and it has been up here for a couple of weeks. But yeah, it's not for me. I have enjoyed the video, but I don't know, the song I just find too relentless. What do you think?
I really like the relentlessness of the song. It's interesting that we disagree, because that doesn't happen very often. But I do, the thing I like about it is that repetition. I also like his voice, because he sounds like, not only like a satanic imp, he always sounded like a satanic imp, but the most well-read and sharp-minded satanic imp that won't ever deny the fact that he is a satanic imp and doesn't play down his satanic impness for the sake of appearing intelligent. It's a lovely thought that there are people who are more than willing to show how keenly clever they are with long words and everything, but without appearing like a bookworm. And given that people are so keen to pigeonhole all forms of humanity at the moment in order to make polarizing arguments, I think the presence of people like Kendrick Lamar is heartening, you know, on all levels. But I think to speak specifically to this song, I like it.
Yes, I just to stress, like, I am really heartened by its appearance, but yeah, I've tried it a few times, but it's not for me. At number 9, Something Just Like This by the Chainsmokers and Coldplay, which is slowly receding from the top 10.
Yeah.
Say similar story with Solo Dance by Martin Jensen, which is at number 8. But then at number 7, we've got a new entry, which is Shawn Mendes with There's Nothing Holding Me Back, which we're going to hear a bit of.
'Cause every time that she gets close, yeah, She pulls me in enough to keep me guessing. And maybe I should stop and start confessing. Confessing, yeah. Oh, I've been shaking. I love it when you go crazy. You take all my inhibitions. Baby, there's nothing holding me back. You take me places that tear up my reputation. Manipulate my decisions. Baby, there's nothing holding me back.
So that's There's Nothing Holding Me Back by Shawn Mendes. I'm slightly irritated at the lack of apostrophe consistency in the title to that song, because it's There's Nothing with a G on the end, Holding with an apostrophe on the end of Holding Me Back. And I just think it's either Nothing Holding because you don't pronounce the G's because you're so cool, or Nothing Holding because you've written the words out properly. But that was just like, oh, what you're trying to go for is something kind of loose and laid back and cool and groovy, and what you've done is something that's slightly annoying, which is probably the most loose, laid back, cool and groovy thing to do, I appreciate, to wind up squares like me.
I was going to say, maybe it's very meta, because, you know, in this song, I kind of like how it's a bit like the PG Shape of You, but like it's the kind of the rare song by a young guy about a slightly risky lady that seems like genuinely enthralled to her and kind of like ceding his power over to her rather than being a bit kind of neggy or anything like that. But he sings in it, "You take me places that tear up my reputation," and you get the sense listening to it that he's really into this lady, but he's also slightly scared about going out of his comfort zone. And I think the G in Nothing might be him holding on to his comfort zone, but the apostrophe in Holding is him trying to let go a little bit. I'll give him that.
Do you know, that has completely changed it around. I now love the fact that he's done that. Well done, Shawn Mendes. I mean, musically, this is kind of Chop House, isn't it? It's played with guitars, which I think is interesting. You know, considering so many of the new releases are trying to get exactly the sound that is the hit sound of the nowadays, for Shawn Mendes to have released something which tips a hat to that sound whilst recreating it using other instruments is kind of great, isn't it?
He wasn't somebody that I was super familiar with. He is a Canadian musician who got big off the back of Vine, R.I.P. Vine. And there was an interview with him in the New York Times late last year, which I enjoyed, where he was talking about his slightly more risky new material. He's 18 years old now, and he said, "I'm releasing a song about sex at 18, which is appropriate. I wouldn't have done it if I was 16 or 17. I'll release a song about drinking at 21. You know what I mean?" So, you know, I'm excited about his songs about buying lottery tickets, getting a social security number, starting to play into a pension, that kind of thing.
Bus pass.
Shawn Mendes, I think, is... Yeah, bus pass. Yeah, if he's here for the long haul, I'll be here for his bus pass song.
It's a bit... I mean, in a way, that's also slightly disheartening. I'm going on a definite journey at the moment with Shawn Mendes, because I kind of think, no, writing a song about drinking at 20 is appropriate, because... Or even at 19, because it's like, hey, crazy guys, I'm drinking! I shouldn't really be drinking, but I am drinking. Whereas drinking at 21, you know, and now that I'm legal, I'm off to the bar to have my first lager. Hurrah, hurrah. Do you know
that would be the Ed Sheeran version?
Yeah, that's very true. Sorry, you can't have that, Ed. That's mine. That's a big C with a circle around it with my name next to it.
So at number six is a song which is the polar opposite of the PG 13 There's Nothing Holding Me Back. It is Swallow, another new entry by Jason Derulo featuring Nicki Minaj and Ty Dolla Sign. Freaky, freaky, yeah.
Girl, no swallow nothing, word to the Dalai Lama. He know I'm a fashion killer, word to John Galliano. He cupping that Valentino, ain't no telling me no. I'm that bitch and he know. Like how your wife in these thoughts, you don't get wins for that. I'm having another good year, we don't get blimps for that. It's the gang still cold, we don't get minks for that. When I'm popping them bananas, we don't link chimps for that. Okay, these bitches 2 years now.
I've got such a soft spot for these type of songs where there is no notable artistic merit, shall we say. You would not, this is not going to win, okay, a Jason Derulo album would never win the Mercury Prize. You wouldn't, you know, there's no, you don't get credibility points for enjoying this. I would guarantee at some point there's going to be a Facebook meme not unlike the ones that went around for Stupid Ho by Nicki Minaj, where they quote a section of the lyrics and they put it next to a section of the lyrics to some classical rock song like Bohemian Rhapsody, or that thing, or the thing they did with Single Ladies, where they quoted all the writers next to how many people it took to write Bohemian Rhapsody, and you want to smash your face on the desk and kind of go, oh,
Yeah, I like the way that it seems like a song that's designed to get into people's vocabulary. Like, you can imagine by the time that summer hits, you know, saying swallow or something at the bar. Well, you take, well, you know, your popular American drugs, that will become... It will become a
tomorrow's
thing
think pieces.
Yes, it will become tomorrow's think pieces. I like that it's a... I mean, I'm torn with this one because I like that it's a really, really big, stupid song. It's designed to, like, wangle its way into your vocabulary. I also like that it's a really big, like, out-and-out dancehall song. It's not kind of tempered. It's not that smooth tropical house thing. It is quite aggressive. While I enjoy all the cartooniness of it, I do have to kind of, like, step back and remind myself, this is just a song about swallowing a man's fluids. And I don't really know how I feel about that, but I'm going to try not to think about it too much.
I think that's probably wise. I mean, in a way, we could all do with reflecting on whether that's a life choice that we want to make or not. I just don't necessarily think it should be the man that is the driving force behind forcing that decision. I suppose, in a way, how else could it go? So you put me on an existential crisis here now. All I'm saying is that everybody needs to consider whether that's something that they want to do, and then act accordingly.
Yeah, well, on a similar note, at number five is Passion Fruit by Drake, which we have previously argued about which...
which ghoulie it is.
Yes,
which is your ghoulies or my ghoulies?
Fruit is meant to be. I think we can leave that at that. At number four, Harry Styles is Sticking Fast, I think, with Sign of the Times.
So you can't throw in a word like sticking at this point. We just can't move from genitals to sticking so quickly. I think people are going to be thoroughly grossed out, Laura. You should be ashamed.
I apologise. Well, at least Sign of the Times is, you know, a very earnest song about the apocalypse. And apparently, as we discovered last week, a mother giving birth to a baby and dying, but telling the baby that it's all going to be all right, which is very sweet.
Number three is Galway Girl by Ed Sheeran, about which we have spoken a lot. Number two is Shape of You by Ed Sheeran, about which we have spoken a lot. So at number one, the new number one to replace Shape of You by Ed Sheeran is Symphony by Clean Bandit featuring Zara Larsson, a song that has crept its way up the top 10 stealthily throughout the lifetime of Unbreak My Chart. The verses sound like Wrecking Ball. The chorus is the happy ending to Miley Cyrus's devastation and despair. And it's a good song. It's definitely, and the funny thing about Clean Bandit is that's all it is. It's a really, really good song that people are buying because they like the music. It does exactly what everybody that, you know, everybody who goes into Record Store Day looking like they are superior, you know, that they should be buying Symphony by Clean Bandit, because it's just a really good song. There's no personality to it. There's no hype to it. There's no, you know, campaign of shoving anything down anybody's throat. Thank you, Jason Derulo. It's just a really good song.
Fraser, are you saying that Symphony is real music?
I am. I'm folding my arms and I'm glaring and saying it's real music played on real instruments. So, nah.
I did. Now that this is number one, I tried to do some, you know, deep research to find out if there was anything about it that I was not aware of, any interesting production credits or anything. It is self-produced by Clean Bandit. There is nothing interesting to learn about this song whatsoever. Clean Bandit appear to be very nice young people, quite studiously boring. But I suppose the thing that they're good at is knowing their limits and then finding interesting people to represent their music for them. Like Zara Larsson, I think, is a very winning vocalist. And I do think this has an excellent video. You were saying that the chorus is kind of a happier resolution to Miley Cyrus's, like, desperation, but the video is about a young gay couple. I think at the beginning of the video you see that one of them has been killed, perhaps in a motorcycle accident or something like that, and then the other guy decides that he's going to write this song in his late boyfriend's memory. And it's a very good video. Well done, Clean Bandit.
They finally found a story that works, because ultimately that is the thing with videos, isn't it? They change the meaning, the context of the meaning of the song. I haven't seen the video and I still like the song. So.
Oh yes, you don't. Noted pop video hater Fraser McAlpine.
Absolutely. Gets in the way.
Well, we're going to move on to this week's new releases and high climbers. I know you don't like videos, but the video for Hard Times by Paramore is highly enjoyable, and it also really plays up the whole 80s new waveness of it. There are some geometric shapes in pastel colours that fizz and wiggle across the screen just as you would like them to. It fits really well with the song.
Okay, well, let's hear a selection from the song while we think about Toto Coelho.
Gonna make you wonder why you even try. Gonna take it down and laugh when you cry. And I still don't know how I even survive.
Hard times, hard times.
You're not gonna get your rock bottom.
Yeah, the That's Hard Times by Paramore. There's something really Duran Duran about that song, isn't there? There's that kind of atonal guitar stab that happens in the verse that makes me think of Hungry Like the Wolf.
I love Hard Times by Paramore. I spent 99 pence of my own money downloading it legitimately. I like that it's a bit Afrobeat, it's a bit high life. There's some new wave in there. It's got that very kind of like straight-laced, starchy, funk feeling to it. I really like kind of the madness of Hayley Williams' vocals. That bit where she goes, and I got to hit rock bottom, I think it's in another interview with the New York Times where they talk about how Paramore can basically sound like anything because once Hayley Williams comes in on top of it, that's what makes it Paramore. I think it's super smart. It reminds me of the really, really overheated Lindsey Buckingham parts on Fleetwood Mac's album Tusk, bit of Tom Tom Club in there, even something like Malcolm McLaren for the way that it's playing with African music. I think it is one of the best songs I've heard in ages. It's stuck in my head all the time. Also out this week is Attention by Charlie Puth, I think you say it, which we're going to listen to a very specific part of.
I just want attention. You don't want my heart. Maybe you just hate the thought of me with someone new. Yeah, you just want attention. I knew from the start. You're just making sure I'm never getting over you. Oh. All on my name. Cause you knew that I knew that I knew that I call you up. Baby, another way, another way.
So that's Attention by Charlie Puth. And it's kind of, you know, minimal, Daft Punk, Robo Disco. Has that line, you've been running round, throwing that dirt on all my name. Except he sounds like he's singing turd, doesn't it? Every single time you listen to it now, I'm going to ruin the song for you forevermore. Whenever you listen to the song, you get to that bit, listen to the actual consonants that are used in that word. Starts with a T, ends with a D. He's not saying dirt, he's saying turd. And I don't know why.
Maybe somebody just secretly like flip reverse the song when they were mixing it. But you emailed this thought to me before I had ever heard the song, and now I will forevermore hear it as turd, which I think feels appropriate because it's a bad song and it has a really horrible video. It's got loads of unnecessary shots of girls in bikinis looking kind of dark and moody just because, and it's very much a song about, like, you know, a conniving ex, and the video fully plays into that crazy ex-girlfriend trope. There's some hot girl who smashes Charlie Puth's vase collection against the giant mirrors in his house.
That would be his nan's vase collection, presumably.
Maybe
he's living in his nan's house. Charlie Puth lives in his nan's house, can't say the word dirt. That's the two things we now know about Charlie Puth. Also, he's got poo in his surname. The man's obsessed.
Also, out in the past few days is Right Now by Haim, which I think is a bit of a wrong-footing song from their forthcoming second album. It's very much not what you would expect from a Haim comeback single, but I think it's meant to be a bit of a slow burn.
And now you're saying that you need me, babe.
Right now, right now.
Oh, and now you're saying that you love me, baby.
Right now, right now.
Oh, and now you're saying that you need me, saying that you need me, saying that you need me.
Right now.
And now you're saying that you need me, babe. And now you're saying that you.
Yeah, and I mean, wrong footing is exactly the right way to describe it, because it does that thing at the beginning. It has that pulse, which is, you know, supposed to be, well, it sounds like an old Hammond organ drum machine, you know, auto rhythm thing. But the band play across that beat in such a weird way that it wrong foots you from the start. You're trying to figure out where the downbeat is so that you can thoroughly engage with the song. But of course, in order to do that, you have to start really listening intently, which is part of part of what makes it work. It's so meticulously organized, and every instrument, and in a way, this is a video that I have watched, and in a way what makes it really work is that you see each member of the band, there's only the three of them, working their way around the studio from instrument to instrument, adding their own various parts and then putting instruments down and going to the next one. So there's no great big orchestral coming together moment where everybody's playing everything all at once. And it does make you, it's a perfect appetite whetener. It does make you think, well, where are they going now if they're able to do this? This is the song they want everybody to be aware of as the lead off track on their new album. What's the new album going to be like then?
Well, I have heard the actual, like, so this is a taster single, and the proper first single is coming this week. And it is proper, like, mechanized pop Haim. It is nothing like this. It's not some kind of like yeah, you know, kind of like rock and roll slow burn thing. The thing that I thought was interesting with the video, like, A, they've got Paul Thomas Anderson to direct it, which is very much in the same ballpark as like getting Cameron Crowe to write the Harry Styles profile for Rolling Stone. It's truly signifying like, we are serious, we are rock, we are musicians. And Haim are musicians, and I think they're a really, really great band. But I think it's funny that the video is always in the same, like, when Calvin Harris has been releasing his songs this year, he's been posting little videos of himself playing them at the piano to his Twitter just before they come out. I think because he feels like Taylor Swift undermined his authority. And the video for Right Now by Haim, to me there's something encoded in it where it's like them saying, we're very serious musicians. And because I think a lot of people thought that their debut album was overproduced, which it may be, but I like that kind of overheated production. It's like them saying, we are serious musicians and we play all of this music ourselves and watch us do it, which is great and like totally up to them to do that. But I, having heard what's coming, it is a really, really odd decision. I think it seems strange to lead off your second album campaign with a song that is kind of clearly going to be the last song on the album, it sounds like. And also, I sort of like it, but also I think it doesn't really have enough, it doesn't really sustain your interest to be that brooding. I don't know, I think it's okay, but I think it's a bit flat. Also out this week is Thunder by Imagine Dragons. Let's have a bit of that.
Basic, say you're easy, you're always riding in the backseat. Now I'm smiling from the stage while you were clapping in the nosebleeds.
So that's Thunder by Imagine Dragons. And the weird thing about it is they seem to feel that thunder is something that knocks. So they sing Feel the Thunder and then it's bang, bang, bang. It's like thunder does not do that. That is not the noise that thunder does. If you had to give a rhythmic pulse to thunder, it would not be bang, bang, bang. That's someone at the door. I think if this song does well, every time there's a storm and you start to think about meteorological conditions, you will be going lightning, then the thunder, and it will probably stick in your head. So in a sense, they've got the sort of market for places where there are often a lot of storms. That will be their biggest demographic for Imagine Dragons.
Do you know what I think pop music has really been lacking in the past few years, Fraser?
No, I don't, Laura. Do tell me.
Songs about being young and sweet and naive and a child, which then go on to kind of, in that very humble, braggy kind of way, go, but my aspirations, they all kind of came true. And sweet little old me, who could possibly have known? And this is very much one of those songs. It's like 7 Years by Lucas Graham. It's like Castle on the Hill by Ed Sheeran. I hate it. Imagine Dragons are one of the... I know that they're a hugely popular band, but my perception of them is just like, they're one of those bands that's even more wallpapery than something like Maroon 5. I think this is a horrible song. I strongly dislike everything about it. Another song out this week is Bon Appetit by Katy Perry featuring Migos. Let's have a bit of that.
Looks like you've been stabbing. You got those hungry eyes. You could use some sugar. Cause your levels ain't right. I'm a 5-star Michelin.
Like this song, but I enjoy many things about it as well. I really like how when Katy Perry brought out Chained to the Rhythm, she was saying that her new era was purposeful pop. She's on the cover of Vogue America wearing some kind of pantsuit. She was obviously on the campaign trail with Hillary Clinton last year. It seemed like, you know, Katy Perry was getting hashtag woke. Indicating that, yeah, she was going to have this great kind of politically conscious new era. I like how she's gone to that, to literally singing, my body is a buffet, boy, eat it up. I'm not really sure whether this would count as first course or dessert to the Swallow song we were talking about earlier, but it's definitely two sides of the same kind of body fluid drench coin. But saying all that, I don't want or need Katy Perry to be a political pop star in any way. As much as I enjoyed that weird performance at the Brits where she had skeletons dressed as Theresa May and Donald Trump and tiny people dancing dressed in houses, maybe in some kind of tribute to the housing crisis. What I want Katy Perry to do is squirt whipped cream out of her boobs, do really, really cheesecakey innuendo and sing about sex like it's a big cartoon. And this song does that in spades. I'm not really sure what is the worst lyric. I kind of like got me spread like a buffet, which is horrifyingly gynecological. She also sings, I'm a five-star Michelin, a Kobe flown in, you want what I'm cooking, boy. A Kobe, I didn't know this either, is a very expensive steak, I think possibly from Japan. And she also sings, eat with your hands, fine, I'm on the menu. Everything about it is just super, super unsexy, but I do find it very compelling.
It's weird, isn't it? Because in a sexual sense, why would you need that permission? Because I don't want a knife and fork bringing into the boudoir at all. And she sings, gonna hit that sweet tooth. Now, I think there is a place for teeth in the act of making love, but hitting teeth just makes it sound like you've done something wrong and someone is in pain, sweet or otherwise.
Yes, I think, you know, to be... I like this song, but I think the mixing of metaphors in it, I think one could potentially describe it as a dog's dinner. It's what she's come up with here. But I do quite like the beat. It's, you know, it's not as understated as Chained to the Rhythm, which I kept thinking was boring, but it kept creeping up on me. Curiously, it is really, really one note, which I feel like is a bit of a theme at the moment. This is a song that's been produced by Max Martin, and how one note this was made me think about that interview with Lorde, where she said that when she played Greenlight to Max Martin, he said to her that the pop maths of this don't add up. It's too jarring. It's not going to work. And, you know, maybe he was kind of right. It's not been a gigantic hit. But I don't know. I would much rather have Lorde veering left and right in the middle of a song than something that just kind of goes straight for one lane and goes for it. A song that's about, you know, that's meant to be about all the delicious flavours of one's body. It's very much like, no, we've got one thing. I'm going to stick to it.
Exactly. Some of her cream is not tasty cream. and also, can you get a Michelin-starred buffet? I think one of the things with Michelin-starred restaurants is that they have waiters and waitresses. I don't know.
Yes, everything's produced in tiny little geometric portions. Fraser, what is your most streamed song of the week in your personal chart?
My personal chart, I've gone back to the Little Mix album that was released earlier on this year because one of my children was listening to one of the songs from it. They were listening to Oops, which also features Charlie Poo. And the next song on it, on the album, is called You Gotta Not. And I sort of singled it out early on thinking, well, this is clearly going to be a new single because it's this lovely dance hall inflected gospel call and response type slam of an immature boy, but an immature boy that may have potential if he just packs in his immature habits. Let's have a quick listen to it and then I'll say a little bit more about it.
Get a job, and maybe when you wanna start growing up, we can boom boom boom, maybe ball in the oh, you don't like kids,
you gotta not.
And you still smoke sick,
you gotta not.
Is you afraid of Blue's Clues,
you gotta not.
Do you still use a Bluetooth?
You gotta not.
You love party parties?
You gotta not.
What? Cause they only show off your muffin top. And baby, when you wanna start growing up, I wake up, boom, 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 baby, fall in love.
Let's go.
So that's You Gotta Not, and it's kind of great. It's really, really optimistic sounding pop music with funny lyrics. There's a point at which one of them sings, is you afraid of Blue's Clues? Which is just, for anybody that's seen a lot of children's TV, is a brilliant pop line. But then also in the next slam of this immature boy, they say, are you still using Bluetooth? And I'm just like, what's wrong with Bluetooth? That can be really handy at times. Why don't we like Bluetooth now? Is that, do mature people not lose Bluetooth? Bluetooth, I think they do, but ultimately it just makes me so happy, that song. I've listened to it tons and tons in the last week, just to, you know, as a lift. It's my personal drug, Laura, like we are all taking.
I think it's very much what happens when you let the girl band actually write some of the lyrics, not casting aspersions on Little Mix lyrical kind of skills. But I appreciate the silliness of it. Also, I think, you know, the Jamaican side of it. Have you ever seen that clip? I can't remember what the TV show is, of Jesse from Little Mix attempting to do a Jamaican accent.
I have not.
I think we shall drop a bit of it in right here.
Oh, my name.
Was that the accent?
Leanna's just come back from the island.
Jamaica!
Yes.
That was really good.
that was Jessie Nelson trying to do a Jamaican accent, which is obviously hilarious and terrible. And so I think it's very brazen and brave of Little Mix to pursue that as a musical direction.
Good on them, though. Good on them. I love it. Laura, what's your song of the week?
My song of the week is a song called Finders Keepers by a 21-year-old pop star called Mabel. She is the daughter of Naina Cherry and the producer Cameron McVeigh. Let's hear a bit of that. You got it, I want it. When I'm willing to put my all in, wanna see you in the mornings. It should be me that you're calling. Put your arms all around it. Take me now that you found it. It don't need to be no deeper. It's finders keepers. Put your arms all around it. Take me now that you found it. It don't need to be no deeper. It's finders keepers. It's finders keepers. So there's also a bit of a dancehall soca kind of thing going on in this song, but the thing that I really liked about it was the lyrics. She sings about sex in a way that is very carefree, very on her terms. It's all about, you know, you don't get a lot of songs that are about hookups from the woman's perspective. Hookups, you know, one-off sexual encounters are usually sung about by men, and they're the ones who hold all the power. And when women sing about those kind of situations, you know, there's a bit more kind of trepidation, or women don't necessarily get to sing about those things. But I really like the way that this is all so totally on her terms. She sings like, boy, why are you living in fear? You don't live around here. Like, she's singing about kind of how freaked out the guy is by this situation. And she's saying like, we're going to do this where I live. I do not plan on coming your way. Let's just make use of the timing. And I like how straightforward it is. But yeah, I interviewed her last week and she was ace. And she has a new EP out, I think, at the end of May, which is really, really good.
Fantastic.
So that was this week's Unbreak My Chart. Thanks very much for listening and subscribing. As ever, you can email your thoughts on the charts or reviews of any particular chart-bothering songs or artists to unbreakmychartpod@gmail.com. Sorry we didn't read any out this week, but we had lots to get through, so we'll get back to your emails next week. So yeah, let us know what's going on in your home chart or send any other pop-related inquiries our way.
If you want to listen to any of the songs we've discussed in this week's podcast, apart from the ones that aren't on Spotify, we'll put the best ones in a Spotify playlist and it'll be linked within the show notes.
We'll also add links to some of the articles that we've discussed as well, so you can catch up with those. And you can find us both on Twitter. I'm at Laura Snapes, and Fraser, you are
at @CSI_popmusic.
Our producer is Tay Mawson, and we would also love it if you left us a review on iTunes. Tell your friends to subscribe. See you next week. Thanks very much.
Bye.